We were all out in the garden throwing snowballs. The children had started to build a snowman and I was watching my younger son, Owen, rolling a snowball, when an angel whispered in my ear, but didn't appear. "Is that you, Angel Hosus?" I asked. "No, I am Owen's guardian angel," the angel replied, still not showing himself. "I want you to watch your son. I'm going to show you something." At that moment Owen called, "Mummy, look at the snowball." His big brother, Christopher, ran over to help and in no time at all they had rolled a snowball nearly as big as Owen. "You have made that big enough for the body of the snowman," I said, as I turned and walked towards the cottage. "Now you just need to make another snowball as big as a football for the head, then find stones for the eyes and mouth and a carrot for the nose." But then Owen's guardian angel called out, "Where are you going, Lorna?" I had thought that the angel just wanted me to watch the two boys pushing their enormous snowball. I turned around and there he was. Owen's angel had revealed himself to me. He was extremely tall in appearance, his eyes a stunning emerald green, and he radiated a smile. It was as if he was saying to me, "Look at what you nearly missed by turning your back on me, Lorna." He was dressed in a suit of armor which was very fine and looked like silver, but then a moment later it changed color, into what looked like the color of a fiery flame, in stark contrast with the white snow all around. His feet seemed to be embedded in the snow and glowed under it, yet I know his feet weren't actually touching the ground, or even the snow. Just looking at Owen's guardian angel made me feel very happy. "Lorna, look at your son." As the angel said these words, Owen stood up from pushing the enormous snowball and turned towards me with a big smile, looking very proud of himself. The next moment I saw a magnificent, beautiful energy emerging from Owen's chest, getting larger by the second. As it formed, it looked like a shield, but then it took on the shape of a beautiful heart. This heart was full of life, in colors of emerald green and blue, like running rivers mingling. It was floating in front of my little son's chest, directly connected to it. I was astonished. It was breathtaking in every way. "What does that mean?" I asked. Realizing Owen's guardian angel was standing at my left-hand side, with his hand on my shoulder, I wanted to turn around to face him, but he told me not to. I did as he said and didn't turn to him. He continued, "The heart is the symbol of the shield of life, the giver of life and love, the protector of the earth, of what is right and wrong." I smiled and said to the angel, "That's an awful lot for a grown man to represent, let alone a little child." I asked Owen's guardian angel to help Owen on his journey, to guide him and protect him. "Lorna, when Owen grows up you can tell him what you saw on this day and you can tell him that my name is Angel Trafikis." I watched as Owen pushed another snowball with his brother and watched the shield in front of his heart slowly diminishing in size, and I felt the touch of Trafikis's hand on my shoulder disappear. For a brief instant I saw Trafikis standing over Owen, and then Owen fell to his knees laughing and called out to me to help him. Chapter 22, Satan of the Gate. Some years ago, at the picnic by the lake, Angel Elijah had told me that God was going to test me in the presence of Satan. One day, Elijah came to visit again and told me that Satan would reach me soon. "I can feel him getting closer," I said. I was terrified, afraid for myself and for my children. "Don't be afraid," Elijah told me. "Prove your faith in God." It's hard to describe, but from the time Elijah had spoken to me by the lake I had been able to feel Satan traveling towards me. Imagine, I could feel him a million miles away, then I could feel him when he got within 1,000 miles of me, then within 100. It took years from the time that Elijah said he was coming, for him to get near me. But I could feel him getting closer all the time. And now Elijah had confirmed that he was near. Satan got closer and closer. One day, around midday, angels Michael and Hosus and all of my angels came and formed a half circle around me, in front of me. They said this was to help prevent me feeling the great evil that comes from Satan. Then my angels disappeared and I couldn't see them anymore. As I walked back into the cottage and closed the front door, I knew he was standing at my gate. I felt cold and frozen, I felt the life being drained from me. It was as if I was standing on the tracks facing a fast-moving, oncoming train and being told it would stop right in front of me if I had sufficient faith. I kept remembering what Elijah had said, "Prove your faith in God." Satan must have been at the gate for weeks. I was in a permanent daze, lost in time. Then one evening, as I got into bed, I knew he was at the front door. I was feeling the power of Satan and it was unbelievably strong. I called on my angels, but they didn't seem to be answering me. Joe and the children were all asleep in our bedroom. God and the angels must have put them into a deep sleep. I sat in bed with my knees up and the blanket pulled up under my neck. I was trembling with fear. I sat there for some time and then, suddenly, all my angels, Ahosus, Michael and Elijah, appeared and surrounded me. They told me not to be afraid, then they disappeared as suddenly as they had come. I could feel the presence of Satan walking into the house. He walked to the bedroom, and as he reached it, everything in the room disappeared, including Joe and the children. It was as if everything had vanished into darkness, even the bed I was sitting on. I was left alone with Satan. It was horrific to feel the power of Satan, all the evil, the terror, the horror. I can't say whether it was a he, or what he or she looked like. It just seemed to be a mass of bad, of darkness, of great strength and power. He had great confidence, and he certainly had no fear. Then God walked into the darkness. He appeared in a human form, as a young man, just as he had done in the prayer group. He was dressed in brilliant white, his face radiant and his hair dark and shoulder length. He stood on my right and stretched out his arm to me and took my hand. Having the presence of God on my right gave me strength. I knew God was keeping Satan at bay, stopping him from coming any closer, but I was still terrified, more terrified than I have ever been in my life. I was shaking. I sat in bed with Satan on my left, at this great darkness, this great evil, and on my right was God. I couldn't see Satan clearly, he was just a dark mass, but I could see God clearly. Greater than when I looked to God, the fear disappeared, but when I looked back to Satan it returned, and stronger than ever. I realized I was being tested by God and asked to show that I was not afraid of Satan, that I was stronger than him, that I could push him away. I also knew that the presence of God and his touch on my hand gave me the strength I needed to push Satan away. Three times I repeated, "Satan, go away. I choose God over you. I am stronger than you." Each time I said this, he stepped back, and by the third time he was out of the bedroom door. Then God pushed him away, out of the house, out of the area. It was as if he was pushed down a long dark tunnel into nothingness. That day I proved to God that I had the faith to push Satan away. Satan does exist, I have no doubt about this at all. If we allow Satan into our lives, he will come in. He will act as a god and may let great things happen in our lives. There may be great wealth, great external success, but at an enormous cost. Satan does not want us to evolve spiritually and will oppose those who try to open the hearts and minds of others and help them to see differently. Man is evolving spiritually. It is part of evolution for man to change and for the body and soul to become more united and eventually become one. I see people becoming less conditioned, more questioning and more open to exploring issues of a spiritual nature. God tests us all sometime, it's part of our spiritual growth. We all have the power to push Satan away. This is something we should never forget. If we push him away, he will take a step back. He has to. Unfortunately, he will still be there, but his power will be less. And we can always call on God and his angels to strengthen our hands, our belief, and our faith. Joe's diabetes was becoming chronic. He would frequently faint or feel very weak, and sometimes Christopher would rush in from the garden screaming that Dad had fallen over. It was very difficult for him, and for us. In most cases, diabetes responds to medication, but in Joe's case it wasn't so simple, and the doctors, despite their efforts, were unable to control it. The doctors also knew that it was affecting his heart. Joe hadn't worked since being diagnosed with diabetes. He had gone for an interview as a security guard in Maynooth College, which would have been very handy as it was so close to home, but at the last moment they told him that they couldn't offer it to him because of the results of his medical. Joe was bitterly disappointed. On one of the many times Joe was in hospital, a nurse suggested it mightn't be a bad idea if we had a phone in the cottage. About 6 weeks later it was installed, thanks to the local health authorities. But I only used the phone for emergencies and incoming calls, as I was afraid of running up a big bill. Shortly after the phone was installed, the children were playing out in the garden when a car pulled up. I was around the back cleaning out one of the sheds. We spent a lot of time in the garden. We had a few chickens running around and a neighbor had given us a puppy. On this day I heard a man call hello, and I went around and greeted him. He was getting out of a car. Inside it was a woman and child. He asked, was he at the right house? I smiled and said, I don't know. Who are you looking for? The healer, he replied, my wife is not well. I smiled but felt unsure. I knew he was looking for me, but I had never been called this before. In fact, I felt embarrassed at being called a healer. I didn't feel good enough. I took a deep breath and said, yes, you're at the right house. Please come in. We walked into the kitchen. They introduced themselves as Fintan and Peg, and their son was called Damon. The little boy stayed outside and played with my children, the chickens and the puppy. This was the first time that someone called to the cottage to ask me for help. I never learned who had sent them to me or told them I was a healer. They were to be the first of many though. Years later, when I met Fintan again, he told me that when he saw the cottage with the children, the puppy and the chickens, he knew he was in the right place. He also told me that his wife's health had improved enormously after the visit. I got a call one day from a woman called Josie, who had been given my telephone number. Her son had been diagnosed with cancer and she had come to me looking for support. She also asked me to see another family whose son also had cancer, so we arranged that they would come the following Monday morning. On Monday morning, at about 11:15, a car pulled up to the gate. I opened the hall door and welcomed the family in. We shook hands as we walked into the kitchen and the father introduced himself as Dermot, his wife, Susan and their son Nick. We sat down at the table in the little kitchen and Nick played with some toys his mum had brought while I talked with his parents. After a few minutes, he gave me a big smile and said, "Stop talking, Mum. And let Lorna bless me and tell me the name of the angel who is going to help me to get better. Then I can go out into the garden and play." His father told him not to be so impatient, to give me a chance, but I said it was okay. "I'll tell you what we will do," I said, "I will bless Nick and pray over him and ask for the angel's name. Nick, sit on your mum's or dad's knee." Nick sat on his dad's knee. "There is no guarantee that your guardian angel will give me his name, Nick," I said to him, "so you will have to pray with me as well and ask your guardian angel to open your mind and heart. When I am finished, you can go out and play in the garden, so I can talk to your mum and dad." I had a look at him and I asked God to show me where his cancer was. I could see it, but I didn't tell anyone where I saw it. It was actually quite aggressive and I thought to myself, "Oh God. There really is going to have to be a miracle here if he's going to live." There was a thought in my mind that maybe Nick was not supposed to live, that his journey in this life was to get closer to God and get to know his angel. I was also aware that this could be a part of his family's journey. While I was praying over Nick, asking God to grant the miracle that he would get well, his guardian angel appeared for a few moments. He told me that the miracle would not be granted, that I must tell Nick's mum and dad to spend every moment they could with their son, that time was precious. I wasn't to tell them that their son would die, as they were not yet able to cope with that information. I was also to tell Nick the name of his angel. Nick sat very still on his father's knee while I prayed over him and, when I was finished, I blessed him and he jumped off his dad's knee saying, "Tell me my angel's name." Sit back up there on your dad's knee, I said, so I can tell you its name, and what your guardian angel looks like. Nick, your guardian angel looks magnificent. He has clothes that seem to sparkle in all colors, and he has a cape that is constantly moving. He has beautiful, sparkling green boots, the most beautiful green I've ever seen. They come up to his knees, with big, square silver buckles. He has a gold belt around his waist, and in the middle of it is another silver buckle. Nick sat completely still on his father's knee, not taking his eyes off me. You could see his excitement as I described his guardian angel. His hair is red like fires of flame, I continued, and his eyes are like stars. And he has what looks like a sword in his left hand, but actually it's a sword of light and it flashes. Your guardian angel said I was to tell you that when you're feeling unwell, all you've to do is ask and he will touch you with his sword of light and make you feel better. Nick jumped off his dad's knee again and said, can I go out and play now? His father took him out into the garden. His mother, alone with me now, started to cry and asked, what did the angel say? I find it very hard when a parent says to me, what did the angels say? And it's not good news. What can I say? Sometimes a parent will ask, what did I do wrong? Have I committed some big sin? Is this God's way of punishing me? We have to understand that this is our path, the journey we have chosen for ourselves long before we are born into this world. Look at your son, I replied. Look at the belief and faith he has. He's not afraid. He's not afraid to get better and not afraid to go to God either. Listen to your son, he'll give you many messages. When Nick's father came back in, I talked with both parents for a few minutes. I told them the angels said that they should spend as much time with their little son as possible. The family went off and I used to hear from them regularly. Whenever Nick was in hospital or not feeling well, he would ask his mum or dad to ring me to ask his angel to use his sword of light to make him better. No sooner would his parents ring me than the pain would be gone. Nick could, of course, ask his own guardian angel for help, but I have found with sick children that they often ask their parents to ring me. Perhaps it gives them more confidence. One time, when Nick was in remission, he got his parents to bring him back to see me. He insisted on seeing me alone and told his parents they must stay in the car, that he needed to see me without them. When we were on our own, Nick told me that he talked to his guardian angel all the time. He told me that his angel had told him that in the future, maybe soon, he would be taking him to heaven. Nick said that was okay with him, that he was 9 years of age now. He told me that he had told his mum and dad that he would be going to heaven someday soon, but they had replied that they didn't want to hear that kind of talk. Nick told me that his mummy wouldn't stop crying. I tell mummy that I don't mind going to heaven and this is all right, but she doesn't listen to me. I asked, Nick, would you like me to talk to your mum and dad? Yes, would you do that, Lorna? I gave Nick a big hug and said, let me pray over you now and bless you, and I'll talk to God and your guardian angel and ask them what I should say to your mum and dad. I will ask their guardian angels to help them to let you go to heaven when the time comes. We prayed together and I blessed Nick. Then we went outside to the car and I invited his parents, Dermot and Susan, to come in. Our dog, Heidi, had pups and Nick played happily with Ruth and the puppies in the garden, under the tree. I smiled as I watched them. Nick's parents fussed over him, but he told them to leave him alone, that he was playing and they were to go in and sit with me and listen to what his guardian angel had said. Susan gave me a worried look as we went into the kitchen. We sat at the kitchen table and I spoke to them as gently as possible. I told them what their son had said, how Nick's guardian angel had spoken about taking Nick to heaven someday soon. I asked them to try, if possible, to be strong and to listen to their son and to spend as much time with him as they could from now on. They cried, holding each other in their arms, sobbing. It was heartrending to see. Eventually, both parents spoke. They told me they had been listening to what Nick had been saying about his guardian angel taking him to heaven for the last few months, but they found it too hard to bear. They felt a little ashamed that Nick had had to ask me to get them to listen to him. I hugged both of them, blessed them, and they went home. A few days later, Ruth walked into the kitchen saying, "Mum, you remember that boy I played with in the garden the other day? I liked him, he was a really nice boy. What is his name?"
"Nick," I replied.
"I know he is sick, Mum. Is he going to get better?"
"No, he's going to heaven," I told her. I saw tears in my daughter's eyes as she said, "That's not fair. He is such a nice boy."
I gave my daughter a big hug. I just held her in my arms for some time, and then she said, "I'm all right now, Mum," and went off to do her homework. A few months later, Nick became seriously unwell again and was in and out of hospital. Every so often, I would get a phone call from his parents, saying that Nick asked them to ring me to ask for the pain to be taken away. It always was, and I thanked God for that miracle. One day, though, I got a phone call from Susan to tell me that Nick had peacefully passed away the night before. I told his mother always to remember that Nick is a beautiful soul in heaven, and that he is beside her every time she needs him. It's hard to describe the effect Nick had on his family, his parents and his brothers and sisters. They had lost a son and a brother, and yet it was as if his sickness and death awoke the entire family. Nick showed them such compassion and love, it was as if God himself shone through the child. He was different. In a way, he was like an angel himself, an angel who shone for all who came into contact with him. If you go into a children's hospital, you will meet children who are seriously ill, yet despite this they are happy, so full of love. Few of them have any bitterness or resentment. It's as if they are here to show us their light. I am always fascinated by the wisdom of children. Children who are terminally ill become very spiritual and so grown up, so matter-of-fact, even at as young as 4. It's fascinating and very beautiful. One other thing that's worth remembering about children is how spiritually open they are when they are very young. After all, they have only just come from heaven. Many of them see angels, even though they generally forget this later. Many of them may often also see spirits, particularly spirits of grandparents, or other relatives, who have come to protect them. I have frequently come across cases of very young children saying things like, "Granda was playing with me." I've heard of parents looking through a family photo album with a child who talks about knowing someone who was dead before the child was born. The child may even have a message for the parents. Children are founts of wisdom, including from the other world, and we should listen to them more. More and more people came to visit me. By this time, Joe was so unwell that he was rarely out of the house, and when people came, he would disappear. He was a proud man and he didn't want anyone to know he was ill. No one who came to see me knew what was going on in my life, or the difficulties I was facing with a seriously ill husband and the knowledge the angels had given me that he wouldn't be with me much longer. A woman came to visit me, looking for the intervention of angels. She was a medical student called Marion. She told me that she was really stressed and couldn't cope with her exams. "I heard that you talk to angels," she said to me. "I believe in God. I have faith and I believe in angels, but I really need help now, because I am under such pressure that I fear I am going to have a breakdown." Marion was studying to be a doctor and was almost qualified, but she was terrified she would not pass her final exams. She desperately wanted to become a doctor, and she knew that she could be a good doctor, but she was finding the whole process very tough. I told her that her faith and her belief had helped her through this rough period and that God had already sent her angels to give her the strength to stick it out. We prayed to God and the angels to send her angels who could actually teach her to pass her exams and guide her to become a spiritual, loving and caring doctor. We all have our guardian angel with us all the time, but the guardian angel, in its role as gatekeeper of your soul, can allow other angels to come into your life to help you with different things. I call these angels teachers. These angels come and go frequently and are different to guardian angels. We asked for a group of angels who would be her teachers. As we prayed, I could already see 3 angels on their way to her. They were striding towards her,
but hadn't reached her yet. All three of them are men, I said. Not a woman amongst them. I hope you don't mind that. Marion laughed and cried with relief and asked me to ask God to have the angels arrive before she left me because she really needed them. I prayed over her. I asked God for all the confidence, the courage and the abilities that she needed. And I asked for hope because she needed to be able to see hope within her own life. As I finished praying over her, I asked for the names of the angels who had been sent to help her. I was told that she could call the angels the three stars. They had already arrived and were waiting outside the door for her to step out into her new world. Recently, years after she came to see me, I got a call from Marion. She is now a doctor, working overseas and doing a lot to help people. She rang because she wanted to thank the angels. I had to ring you to ask you to thank them because, that way, I feel the message will get there quicker, she said. I had to laugh. I told her that with the phone call we were already thanking them. I reminded her never to forget to call on her three angels whenever she needed them. They are still there, they haven't left you. You still have a journey to undergo and a lot of work to do, I said. Marion had believed enough to ask the angels for help. She empowered the angels, and in return the angels empowered her. Most of the time people came to see me, but occasionally, in special circumstances, I was asked to go to people's homes. Often if this happened someone would collect me and drive me. One day I was taken to a big old house to visit a boy of about three who was very sick. He was very run down and had difficulties breathing. He could hardly get out of bed. There was an old man there, and I thought he was a member of the family. It was only when he sniggered at me that I realized he was a ghost, a spirit, but he had turned his light down so that he had appeared to me like a living person. He knew he had caught me out and he was highly amused by this. When I was having a cup of tea with his grandmother, after seeing the child, she mentioned that her grandson was so like her grandfather, who had also lived in that house as had generations before him. She said this a few times. For some reason I don't fully understand, the grandmother's continuous reference to him being like her grandfather was resulting in this spirit staying around. The spirit was that of a great-great-grandfather of the sick child. I knew the spirit wasn't good for the family, that he was in some way a malevolent force, and that his presence was a part, if not all, of the child's sickness. All the time I was in that house I kept watching this spirit and praying that he be surrounded by love and angels, so that he could depart and go to heaven and leave the little boy in peace. A few weeks later, I was asked back to the house to see the little boy, who was now completely recovered and full of energy. I knew that the spirit had left. I was amazed, the house looked completely different. The house I had been in a few weeks before had been damp and not very clean, with a big old staircase and an ornate grimy fireplace in the sitting room. Now I was in a beautifully restored and well cared for old house with no fireplace. I asked the grandmother, "Where's the fireplace?" She looked at me a little strangely and said that nothing had changed since I was last there. It had for me, though. Not only had I seen the spirit of her grandfather, but I had been shown the ghost of the actual house as it had been long ago, when he lived in it. Chapter 23, Soulmates. Joe was still unable to work, but at least he was at home so he could keep an eye on the children and so sometimes I was able to get a job for a short while. I scrubbed floors in a school, I worked in a shoe shop, but the truth is there was not a lot of work available at that time for which I was qualified. Christopher's diet as a celiac added to the financial problems. Joe needed special food too. I struggled hard to feed the family with the limited money we had. We lived from hand to mouth. My daughter Ruth now laughs that the only time she got a piece of meat was when she chewed the bones of the meat from her dad's plate. There were some short periods when Joe's diabetes was under control and he was well enough to do odd jobs. During one of these spells he gave driving lessons. But I always looked on in fear, concerned he might have a turn. He was always very happy when he was well enough to work, but unfortunately these periods never lasted long. We had chickens in the garden, so every so often Joe used to call on a coffee shop in the town, looking for remains of bread to give the chickens. He didn't say that they would also help feed his wife and children, but they did. We used to go through the bags of food he would bring home to see what was edible, cutting off the moldy parts.